Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast. I am your host, Eric Podwatchki, and every Thursday I'll be releasing a new episode where I interview someone currently working in the Bitcoin industry and what their experience is like. My only ask is that if you're a Bitcoin company looking to hire talented people, or if you're a Bitcoiner looking to get a job in the Bitcoin industry, please head over to our website and get in touch with us. And our website is www.bitcointalent.co. My guest today is Mitch Klee. He is a content marketing professional and data analyst at Forman Mining, who is passionate about Bitcoin energy. His expertise is creating engaging content and leveraging data insights to help simplify information into easy-to-understand visuals and written stories. Now, let's bring in Mitch to hear more about what it's like working as a Bitcoin mining analyst. Thanks for joining me, Mitch.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, likewise. Me and Mitch actually met a couple weeks back over in the Commons, so that was fun.
Yeah, that was the Commons is awesome. We went to that comedy show. That was fun. That was fun. As
yeah,
well.
got a chance to see Joe Rogan while I was in town. That was cool.
Yeah,
So I'm interested in what you did before Bitcoin. What was your history like? What did you study in school? Where'd you go in professionally working?
Mm-hmm. So I went to school for entrepreneurship, business degree in communication. And so learned a bunch about business in college. I did a internship where it was kind of like running my own painting business. And so I just went, did a bunch of exterior painting, ran that business. So graduated with an entrepreneurship degree, did some sales after that, and ended up not feeling like as fulfilled in the sales role. So I added some schooling for data analytics, and so did a 6-month intensive boot camp for data analytics. Went down that rabbit hole. Worked as an analyst at a large grocer, and I was a pricing analyst there, and then eventually ended up working in the Bitcoin space.
Nice. Okay. Study entrepreneurship. What is that like in school? Like, what are the classes like?
Yeah, so I mean, just as you would imagine it would be business courses, and interestingly, like my major added on some languages. So I studied Spanish, lived in Spain for a semester,
nice.
Did a little bit of German as well. I haven't practiced that. That's like long gone at this point.
Yeah.
But I hear it comes back pretty quickly. Outside that, I mean, we took entrepreneurship classes. I was in the entrepreneurship club. I was president of that my last semester. And kind of the coursework is just like, you know, figure out what sort of business you would be making. You know, find a business, kind of LARP, I guess, of how you would start that business, mm-hmm. and do the financial projections. What's your market share like? How big can your market share get as a percentage of the general overview market share, and kind of just like mapping that all out and making a minimum viable product, kind of like, you know, testing out the scenario of like starting a business.
Yeah, I think that set you up well for at least working in the Bitcoin industry, because a lot of the companies here are startups, and thinking from the perspective of being a business owner, you know, what are the parts that go into it? How do we add to the bottom line of the business? It's probably very useful now.
Yeah, absolutely. Out of college, I just wanted to work for a startup. I think it was a good transition there.
I'm curious too. You mentioned a boot camp you did, like a 6-month boot camp. I always mm-hmm. preach to people looking to find a job in the industry, you know, try to take on a new course, a new skill set that, you know, might take a couple months, and then you can add that to your resume. What was that like? Did you do it through a university or did you find it online?
Yeah, so I did it through university, and then COVID happened. And then, so after that, obviously, it just, everything went online. So it was supposed to be in person and ended up being online. Before that, I think I was writing some articles for Bitcoin Magazine, and had just a lot of interest in analytical work, kind of like doing it on my own through Excel and stuff like that, and wanted to get like dig deeper into analytics and data and stuff. So ended up yeah, doing the course online, it was a lot of Python, a lot of some SQL, a lot of visualizations like ETL cleaning, stuff like that. I figured out that I'm not a coder. I'm more business mindset. So, but it's really useful because I'm able to kind of like understand what the data side is like and understand how that functions and the logistics of everything and kind of like know the framework of it all. So you can kind of relate to people on the other side of that.
Right. So I think someone listening in the audience here, if they wanted to make somewhat of a career change, a good possible option would be taking one of these bootcamp courses and then learning the basic foundations. And if anything, you can learn what you don't want to do too. I've learned that in school too.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a great way to kind of understand, do something you're interested in and kind of like expand your skill set because it's always needed when you're looking, who knows what, specific job might be looking for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so you also mentioned you started writing for Bitcoin Magazine. Where does Bitcoin play in the picture here? So you graduated from school, you're working, you mentioned maybe an art business of some sort, and then you had a analytics job as well. Where does Bitcoin fit in?
Oh, no, that wasn't an art business. It was, it was literal like painting houses. So.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah. So it was like, scraping paint, sanding, priming, everything.
Gotcha. And
yeah. So, I mean, we did like, I think I did like, oh, I did 21. I literally did 21 houses. So that's cool. I did 21 houses in a summer over my college, during college. I think, I don't know how long ago was that. But to transition, 21 houses. I got into Bitcoin after I graduated college. Like right afterwards, I was looking for an industry, and I was also looking for places to kind of like hold my wealth. Like I was going to earn more money. Coming out of college, you can earn more money.
Yep.
And I wanted to figure out how to invest and where I can put that. Ended up listening. I think I was listening to Tim Ferriss back then. And it might have been Balaji that was on the podcast.
Okay.
Got it hooked, started going down the rabbit hole. I was in sales, and then, like I said before, I didn't really find that that particular sales position was fulfilling for me. So I ended up started to try and figure out what I could do and how I could kind of like contribute to the Bitcoin space.
Yeah.
For like 4 years, all I did was tweet. I didn't really do anything outside that.
Hey, that's something.
But, So before I got my, first job working in Bitcoin, so.
Okay. Now, how did you get your foot in the door with Forman? I'm guessing Forman's the first Bitcoin company you worked for?
No. So I was working at Compass before that.
Okay.
I was working as a mining analyst over at Compass, and it was like a mixture between writing and analytics. So I kind of found out my like position and how I can contribute to Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ecosystem. Was I knew I could write, so I could just like write and I would also formulate like hypotheses based off of data and try and dig into that data. Pre Compass, I mentioned I was writing at Bitcoin Magazine, and I kind of wrote an article. It was called "Leapfrogging the Legacy Financial System," I believe, and it just goes through technological adoption, S curves, how leapfrogging historically happened. So that was, if you're looking at mobile phones and landlines, is a really good example. Places like the Global South, Africa, South America, those places, they don't have like the money to build this infrastructure for landlines. And so you would have to, so what happened is, mobile phones came out and they were drastically cheaper and they completely leapfrogged landlines going straight to mobile phones. So I kind of just like started to mix my analytical skills and research knowledge and how I could, you know, kind of write into that's, and I figured out, like, that's how I would kind of start to contribute to the Bitcoin space. And that was my foot in the door. Started writing. They hired me on part-time and then full-time at Compass, and transitioned from Compass over to Forman. And how that happened was, it was really more like my network. So I ended up getting hired based off of my network. I knew somebody and got hired for the role. So
how'd you go from writing articles for Bitcoin Magazine to Compass? Was it like inbound? Did someone reach out to you, or did you start reaching out to them about potential jobs?
Somebody reached out to me, which was great, because it was, I was getting towards the end of my other job where I was working at the large grocer as like a pricing analyst. And it was interesting too, because I was working as a pricing analyst after they printed all this money. So there was just like, it was just a price increase after price increase. And it, we were just following everybody in the industry. So that was crazy. And yeah, it just, someone reached out to me, and it was actually because I was posting on Twitter. Bitcoin Magazine was a huge help. And obviously I did stuff for free. Well, I don't know if that was obvious, but I did stuff for free over at Bitcoin Magazine. I was just doing what I was interested in my free time. Contributing to the space, tweeting, and got picked up by somebody. They wanted me to start, you know, working as a mining analyst over there. So,
gotcha. I hear that story over and over again too. It's, you know, just start contributing to the Bitcoin space in whatever capacity you can. So for you, you're a writer. You like writing. Combine that with some intriguing articles, get it published through Bitcoin Magazine, and then opportunities start coming to you.
Yeah.
It seems to be the playbook.
No, it is. You kind of like, so like what I did is I looked back and I'm like, how can I contribute? How can I take my skills and kind of create my own? It's like create your own adventure almost. Like you, but take your skills, figure out how you can contribute for the highest value, and just start doing it. Twitter's free. You can go to, you know, publications. Start volunteering at, you know, maybe local meetups, and just contribute.
Exactly. And then that's how you also build an initial network, which you said really how you got the job now at Forman was through building that network, being at Compass and having that proof of work behind you to show for what you've done in the past, and bring that into Forman Mining now as an analyst. So I'm curious, what was your interview process like for Forman?
The interview, it was pretty quick. So, it wasn't, it was good. And I think a lot of that happened because I already knew somebody. So, because I had somebody that kind of like referenced me and said, hey, you know, this is his background. It was sort of a quick interview process. It was, ended up to be a really good fit.
Do you recall during that process, was there a specific question or a task that you had to do that really made you think or made you think outside the box?
I didn't really have, like I said, a long interview process. I don't think there were any specific questions. I wish there was. I can't recall like a specific question that made me think out of the box, I guess.
No worries. Also wondering, while, you know, during that interview process, did they give you any assignments at all? How do you test someone if they're a good mining analyst or not?
So the kind of like what I'm doing over at Forman.
Yeah.
It's a number of things. I think my background, like the tests and everything, sufficient be that I had like all these previous articles. It was a really easy transition over to that. So a lot of it is like writing and like deep research and the, you know, mining industry. And on top of that, it's more of like some analytics as well.
Okay.
I think Like I said, it wasn't very intensive. There weren't many tests or anything like that. And I think it was probably because of the, you know, the proof of work, I guess you could say.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because when I'm recruiting people to work in Bitcoin companies, I am looking for that proof of work. And if they don't have to do something to show for it, if I go and Google your name and, you know, YouTube videos or your blog or something's not popping up about Bitcoin, then I have to go and interview and ask, like, what do you know about Bitcoin, really? But yeah, you already had that really shown for you. So yeah. I'm curious, as a mining analyst, what do you do day to day at your job?
Yeah, day to day, a lot of it is research. So one of my, you know, one of the first articles that I wrote there was how Bitcoin mining contributes to demand response. So that is, it was just like deep research and breaking down the electrical grid, how that works, how demand response works, and how Bitcoin mining plays a role. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did some good research kind of for me to, I guess, work off the back of.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, Bitcoin miners are the fastest demand response tools that we have right now. So as far as like the day-to-day, yeah, it's just kind of like a lot of research, writing. I'm doing internal analytics as well, kind of like BI stuff, business intelligence stuff.
Yep.
And it's a mishmash of a lot of different things. So combine that with some research and strategy,
yeah,
and that's kind of like the day-to-day.
Gotcha. And how much time a day do you think you're spending on the research aspect?
Yeah, I think that's the majority of it. So the majority of it is it, and there's actually, so ChatGPT is like helping so much more
with
some of this research stuff. It's kind of like they're, and you kind of, you have to audit it as well. So you have to know, and you really have to know the topic pretty well, or at least generally well.
Yeah,
but that's kind of like enhancing research aspect of it, but it does take up a lot of time. A lot of you know, it just depends on what's on the plate at the moment. If I'm doing, you know, visualizations or something like that, utilizing data, then that takes up some time.
Right.
Writing, constructing. Yeah, it's,
I'm curious because you brought it up too. So ChatGPT, I've been messing around with it a lot as well for my writing. How are you incorporating yours?
Yeah, so you can kind of utilize it as an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how I'm using it. I'd be using it for research purposes. So like, let's say if you're, you know, looking into PDUs or something like that, you want to know deeper knowledge. There's all this information out there on PDUs, but you want to synthesize it and create some information. This is, I guess, would be a real world example. I wrote an article on PDUs. It's like, what is a smart PDU and what does it do? It's a power distribution unit, and so you can plug your miners into that. It's kind of like a big extension cord. But a smart PDU does phase balancing. Okay, ask ChatGPT, what is phase balancing? Well, phase balancing is blah blah blah, and it gives you all this information, and then you can just like it, instead of. So normally if you were to go down and research and you kind of go down deeper into like into the topic itself, maybe you get distracted or kind of break off, and then you have to spend a bunch of time doing that research and you lose your train of thought. It's interesting with ChatGPT, it's like a path. So you go down this path and there's a couple branches and you're like, branch off here, branch off there, branch there. And then you go to the next one, you branch, branch, branch. And it allows you to delve really deep, extremely quickly, and kind of like make those pathways quicker. And so it's structurally, like it's a deeper structure, I guess you could say, as far as research goes.
As opposed traditionally, I guess you're just going to Google.
Yeah,
you'd spend,
I mean, something that would take you 5 hours takes you 5 minutes. It's insane. So,
do you also think in the near future, ChatGPT has the ability to replace your job?
Yeah, it's possible. It's definitely possible. As for right now, I don't think so. It actually enhances your job. So if you're out there and you're sending, 20, 40 emails a day, you can just, be like, hey, write a quick response, blah, 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 outlining this. Or like, let's say you're in marketing, write me a marketing plan for this situation over X amount of months.
Yeah.
And create a marketing plan. And you can discard some of those things. You can be like, I don't want that. I don't want this. Rewrite that. I think it enhances people rather than replacing. But it's definitely going to, technology is supposed to automate things and then create new opportunities. So if you're going to automate specific portions of your job, sure, maybe it automates some people. I think it actually enhances most jobs.
Yeah, I think so too, at least right now in history where we're at with it. But in the next decade or so, I don't know. It seems like it's taken off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And everything.
You just got to roll with the punches.
Yeah. I always think back to Darwin too. It's a kind of like adapt or die. So right now with this the ChatGPT AI stuff coming out, it's either you learn how to use it to enhance your work or you're just going to be out of the job market basically. Because if Mitch is, if you have two equal candidates, Mitch or another Mitch, the Mitch using the ChatGPT for to help with research and putting together articles is just going to be able to save so much time and energy there. It's going to be so hard to compete with you.
Yeah, you still have to be careful though. You have to double check and make sure these, because it does make stuff up. Yeah. Like I've looked at it, it's like I can't. What was the example? I can't remember the. It'll make things up, and you really have to double check and make sure that it's on point.
Yeah.
But that's just like the review process, I guess.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. It's checking in. It can get you like 80% of the way and 80% of the way there. And then you have to finish the rest off basically.
Yeah.
Also curious, you mentioned the business intelligence side of the business. So when you're not researching and writing, what does that look like in your day to day?
It's just like internal documentation and strategy, trying to, figure out, different paths different things. So kind of like if somebody's asking for hey, like help me figure out the numbers on what this would look like and kind of like visualize that and map it out, that's kind of like what I would be doing.
Gotcha. So still behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So that's what a day-to-day looks like for a mining analyst. I'm curious, what is Foreman overall? What does the company do? What's the main products and services you guys provide?
Yeah, so Foreman is a miner management software. It could also be viewed as like facility management. But what I mean by miner management is, so Brains is firmware. Brains is like you take this optimizing firmware and you put it on top of your miner, or you install it in your miner and it kind of like optimizes it.
Okay.
Miner management software, Foreman is software. So it talks to all the miners and, kind of like manages your farm from a top down level. You get a site map. You can understand which miners are going up and down. You can automate things like automatically spin up your miner if it shuts down, restart it, batch update. You can do things like demand response. So, if there is, if you need to respond to high prices or something like that, it can curtail the, it can do, yeah, just demand response for the entire mine. It's an overall just like a management tool to help kind of like configure, large and medium scale mines.
Okay, yeah, so I guess you're focused more on the commercial side of things? Nothing for at-home miners?
No, at-home miners can use it as well.
Okay.
But the capabilities are kind of like more on a larger scale.
Yeah.
But you can definitely use it. So let's say if you've got a bunch of S9s, like 10 S9s, they're up over at, let's say... some farm or something like that because you got cheap electricity over there and you're trying to heat the farm at night or, the house at night. But you're remote and you don't really go out there, or it's a shed or something like that, and you don't want to walk out to your shed in the middle of the winter, you can remotely kind of like log into them. So it helps with remote management as well. If you're, you've got a container sitting on site doing flared gas mining, and you've got, you know, satellite signal or something connected to the internet, then you can tap into them and kind of like manage them at, you know, away. So remotely manage them. So, yeah.
Okay. And I also saw on your website too, is part of the selling point is that it's not firmware, it's software. So it's not voiding any warranties.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. It's software. Yeah, it's not like Brains. Brains is the firmware.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just knows how to talk to the machines.
Understood. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. What's the company like overall? Like, how many people are currently working at Forman? You know, where are you guys based in?
Yeah, so I think we're around 15 people.
Okay.
And it's based in Baltimore.
Nice.
So we've got an office in Baltimore, brick and mortar. A couple of us are in Austin, and then there's some other people scattered around. But most of the company's in Baltimore. It's like really nice. The office is really cool. I think it was part of like an old, it's near like an old train yard or something like that, but really nice big wooden pillars and wooden floors and stuff like that. I kind of like it, so.
Yeah. Actually, I have a house in Baltimore. I used to live there, so I'm curious exactly where it is, but we could talk offline to point that. I'm also curious about the company culture. Is it a team of full of Bitcoiners or just miners more in general?
Yeah.
What's company culture like?
Company culture. So there's a few like hardcore Bitcoiners, and then it's kind of like software geeks. The story behind Forman was... the two founders started OBM, and OBM is like one, they called it, it was one bar mining, and they called it one bar mining because they only had one bar of cell service.
Okay.
Using cell,
remote.
So they were doing it remote, so they had to find a remote solution, and they started creating it, added more people onto the service, eventually, went public. So, or sorry, it didn't go public, but started publicly. People could use the
being
software.
In business.
Yeah,
right.
Not public. I apologize.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. What's it like working with other Bitcoiners?
It's fun. I like it. You're kind of all on the same mission, really. So.
Yeah, I have the same feeling, too. Like, every day, you're waking up not just to collect a paycheck. You're waking up to contribute to something larger, much larger than that. That's why I love being in the space. I'm also curious as well, are there any upcoming products or software releases you guys have, you can tease out?
Not that I think we can share.
Okay.
But, you know, and not that I actually know. No, we're just, you know, hard at work. I think we're doing more stuff in the demand response side of things. And... yeah, just kind of like helping miners contribute to the grid.
Okay. So here's a scenario. So let's say someone listening to this is brand new into the Bitcoin space. You know, they might like mining, might like learning about it. What's the first thing they could do to get started with mining?
What's the first thing? I mean, you could just buy an S9. Like, literally just buy an S9, plug it in, figure out how it works.
How much do those go for nowadays?
I should not be that expensive.
Yeah, a couple $100.
I mean, in the bull market, it was expensive. But now, I probably wouldn't pay more than $80 for an S9. I haven't looked.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't looked at the price. People might get mad. They're like, oh, my God, I wouldn't pay more than 30 or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So all-in cost. So there's the mining unit itself. There's the electrical infrastructure. And got to make sure you have the, 220 volts set up.
Yeah, I mean, if you've never mined before, you don't even need any electrical infrastructure. That's why the S9 is so good, is because you can plug it into your wall.
Yeah.
And you could buy that, test it out, understand it, and kind of like And maybe you're doing like calculations in the back end, like, okay, yeah, what does my electricity look like? How can I find cheap electricity? Because that's the name of the game. Bitcoin mining is a race to $0 per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. And you need cheap electricity if you want to scale up past that. But if you're, you know, if your question is, how do you start getting into mining first? I would suggest S9 and then just go from there.
Right. Yeah, I think that's good advice. And what about someone that's looking to work in more of the Bitcoin mining space? What's one piece of advice you give them?
Just go to, I mean, start meeting people. Go to meetups. The biggest Bitcoin mining meetup in the world, monthly meetup, is in Houston. So,
oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, yeah, that's sponsored. I think we sponsor it, and it's run by Unchained Capital. So they put it on. They help run it. It's awesome meetup. There, just go to any other meetup too. Like, go around. You don't have to, but you can go out and buy a ticket to Bitcoin 2023 if you like. Mm-hmm. But you really, I think the more consistent meetups are really going to help you. That's what I thought. I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy tickets to these big conferences. When in reality, I think the better connections and the better connections that I made were going to meetups and meeting people every day. So
I tend to agree. It's funny, you go to your local Bitcoin meetup, and I'm sure at least 25% of people are at least at home mining. And you have to figure out of that 25%, all of them probably have a network of people that are involved in the mining space. So very first piece of advice you could do is just go and shake some hands, talk to people if they're interested in mining, and say that first question I brought up before, like, what do I do if I want to get in the mining space? And I'm sure most of these Bitcoiners will help you.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So as we wrap this up here, how can the audience find you online and ask about any mining analyst related questions?
You can find me on Twitter at @MitchKlee_. You can find me, I think, at Foreman blog. We have a ton of blog posts that I've written. You can check out my work there if you want to learn more about the Bitcoin mining industry, how Bitcoin miners contribute to demand response, and just anything Bitcoin mining related. And then I have like a number of other articles out there too, so you can check those out. I've got, I think, some stuff on Bitcoin Magazine as well.
So you can just go there and search your name. It'll pop up as an author.
Yep.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Mitch. Go check out Foreman Mining if you are a miner, whether an at-home miner or a commercial miner, and go give Mitch a follow on Twitter.
All right.
Thanks, Mitch. Thanks, talk to you later.
Bye.
And this is also a reminder that Bitcoin Talent Co. is the first recruiting firm dedicated solely to the Bitcoin industry. Our mission is to equip Bitcoin companies with the top talent in the world. So if you're looking to get a job in the industry, or if you're a Bitcoin company looking for recruiting services, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co.